TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. The New Nuclear Danger, Helen Caldicott. As a young pediatrician in Australia, Helen Caldicott learned about the medical consequences of nuclear war. That changed her life. She eventually campaigned in the U.S. for nuclear disarmament. Now, over 30 years later, concerned about the U.S. plans to build more nuclear weapons and nuclear reactors, she has returned with a new book and new plans. Her book is called The New Nuclear Danger. She plans to establish an institute to support speakers with expertise in nuclear war, energy, radioactive waste, and nuclear disarmament. I recorded her at a house party where she began with a very personal account of why, in her early 60s, she has decided to leave her grandchildren and her garden in Sydney, Australia, to go back on the road as public speaker. She said that 1987 was a turning point for her. After over 20 years of active campaigning, she took a break. Physicians for Social Responsibility, the organization she founded, received the Nobel Peace Prize while excluding her from their leadership. Helen Caldicott returned to Australia and wrote her autobiography, A Desperate Passion. Her next book, If You Love This Planet, was a declaration of love to this earth and a warning about the consequences of global warming. Her most recent book, The New Nuclear Danger, is an assessment of the current crisis. The U.S. government is initiating a new nuclear weapons program through Manhattan Project No. 2 and a new version of Star Wars. Placement in space of weapons designed to exert global control may force other countries into nuclear defense systems. Here is Helen Caldicott at a house party in Walnut Creek, California, talking about her book and her plans.
The book is now called The New Nuclear Danger, George Bush's Military-Industrial Complex, which has a double entendre. Do you all know who the Heritage Foundation is? Heritage Foundation is an organisation, they call themselves a think tank, but they're funded by Lockheed Martin, the biggest military contractor in the world, Hertz Rent-A-Car, Holiday Inns, Coors Beer, Reader's Digest, Ocean Spray Cranberries, and all. It is what they call a think tank, but it's actually an advertising agency for the corporations. They've got $29 million a year, 40% of which is spent on the media. If you turn on Jim Lehrer almost any night, there's a spokesperson from the Heritage Foundation. God damn them. Because they are advertising for the corporations. They do not represent the American people. They're very clever. The papers they write are brilliant. Op-ed pieces in the New York Times, you know, Heritage Foundation. But the underlying ethic is wicked. Because it's for GATT. It's for globalization. It's for the corporations to get richer and richer, like Enron, and then collapse. There's no morality in this at all. It was Heritage Foundation who started to say big government is bad for you. And I can remember in the 70s being on television and a little pretty girl was interviewing me and saying, but isn't big government bad for us? And I think, where are you getting that from? Government is for stoplights, seatbelts, police, healthcare, education. It's us. The government is us, paid for by us, to care for us in community with benevolence. Beloved community is what government is for. But what they say is government is bad for us because the corporations must control the whole thing, and corporations don't want to be involved in education unless they privatise it all, and healthcare unless the corporations own it all. And they don't want any government control of anything. So they don't like regulation, and GATT and WTO are a direct outgrowth of the Heritage Foundation, which thought up the whole thing called economic rationalism. It's not rational, and in the end it's not economic. What I found out when I wrote the book was the Heritage Foundation has actually appointed most of the people in the administration. They either come from the Heritage Foundation or were advised to be in the administration. Many of the people come from Lockheed Martin. Needless to say, the administration's received huge amounts of money to get elected from all these corporations. So they own the administration, and they pretty well own the Congress, you know that. And we don't. So that it's not a working democracy. It is potentially a democracy, and I know because I've had a big influence here, and I'm an alien, and I'm a woman. And so you can have a big influence. It's a democratic vacuum, aching to be brought into line with benevolent, beloved community, which all Americans really want so badly. So that's the administration. George Bush, it's not even worth talking about. I mean, I met with Reagan for an hour and a quarter in the White House, alone with his daughter Patty. His IQ was, I'd say, about 100. Nice man. No, he would have been a good chicken farmer or a stump digger. I mean, he liked working on his ranch. He was a nice man, but he was an actor. And years ago, the Catholic Church had a law that they couldn't allow actors to become bishops because they'd be too dangerous, because they can manipulate people. And he did. Okay, now we've got another one, not an actor, and I have to say clinically, not as bright as Reagan. He'd never travelled, virtually never read a book, but he's a larrikin. Is that an American word? Oh, gee, shucks, you know, here are my cowboy boots, you know, have a beer, or, you know, no, he doesn't drink anymore, but, you know, take you to the ranch and stuff. And he was picked out to be president by a Republican in Texas who saw him come into a room and he had charisma and people lit up. Because he calls people funny nicknames and things. So he was chosen to be the frontispiece for the Lockheed Martin et al. Administration. That's all. So Lockheed Martin et al. Is really determining the foreign policy of America. We don't have statesmen like Cyrus Vance anymore, who's just died. We've got operatives, corporate operatives. Now, what are they actually planning? Let's talk about several things. You all know what the Manhattan Project was, don't you? Well, they're now running the second Manhattan Project, spending as much money as they did on the first. These are the weapons labs designing, testing, developing and building new nuclear weapons. As much money as the first Manhattan Project, and we don't know about it. Other countries say, well, if America's building bombs, we will too. Australia's got a plan to build nuclear weapons and has had for years, and so that will induce lateral proliferation because what America does, everyone else does. The complete comprehensive test ban treaty has never been ratified by America, but to get out of it, they have to give, even though they haven't ratified it, 2 years' notice. But now Cheney et al. Are saying, well, we're going to start actually blowing up bombs underground and we can get ready within about a few months to start doing it again. So soon we're going to have underground nuclear testing again. They're already doing it in a virtual form with computers and they're doing subcritical testing, blowing up plutonium but not producing a nuclear explosion, but looking at the hydrodynamics of plutonium just at the instant before it becomes critical. I mean, the most extraordinary stuff they're doing, and I've detailed all of this in the book. Might be a bit boring, but it's like an encyclopedia. We have to know this. It's like if you've got a disease, I have to tell you that this is your bile duct, your ampulla evata, this is your duodenum, you call it the duodenum, this is your gallbladder, you know. And so that you understand what's going on, so you have to understand because you're all physicians for the planet and for our children, but not just that, for the 20 million species that cohabit the planet with us. So that's the Manhattan 2 project, and the labs are all into it big time, and they're having a big say in the administration too, and some of them are actually moved from the labs into the administration. And many of them wanted to use nuclear weapons in Afghanistan. There was a lot of talk about doing it, particularly in the Pentagon and from the administration. Now, Star Wars. You know, Reagan gave the Star Wars speech. I remember watching it, having spoken only to one Edward Teller. There's a hot place in hell for Teller. He designed the second generation of nuclear weapons, a hydrogen bomb, and he destroyed Oppenheimer in the process. I mean, his story is unbelievable. And he was the one that spoke to Reagan about, you know, this nice shield over America. And remember, we'd see on television this sort of yellow plastic shield with the bombs going boink, boink, bouncing off. And that's what Reagan thought. He thought it was great. When Reagan gave a speech, $60 billion was then spent on developing Star Wars, none of which worked. All the scientists know it would never work, but it's great for the universities. Berkeley, you know, they all took the money, lots of money. Where's the morality in science now? Where's the morality at the universities? Where's the morality of the teachers who teach our children? Children going to the University of California, which is a regent of the labs, runs the labs, the weapons labs. So they're designing and testing the weapons and which could blow up the children they're currently educating. Okay, now what happened was during the Clinton years, Clinton had no courage. Well, first of all, he smoked dope but didn't inhale. Secondly, he never went to Vietnam. And thirdly, because he never went to Vietnam and killed people, he had no courage to take on the military. You've got to be a big testosterone-laden guy to take on the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and he didn't have the courage. He was a pathetic president. I don't care what he did with his other apparatus. He was pathetic. He had an opportunity to produce nuclear disarmament because he had a drunken alcoholic in the Kremlin called Boris Yeltsin who would have done anything. And he could have gotten in a plane and flown to the Kremlin and said, hey, Boris, sign this. We're going to abolish nuclear weapons. And Boris would have done it because there was no reason to have them anymore. And he set up a nuclear investigative team staffed by some quite good people, but the Joint Chiefs just absolutely brutalized them. And one of them said at the end, he said, when you threaten our nuclear weapons, he said, baby, you're threatening the family jewels. You know what the family jewels are, do you not? The Pentagon talk about having a nuclear war like one big orgasmic wump in front of women. And the reason I bring this up is that in medicine, if you have a disease, unless you determine the cause or the etiology of the disease, you can't cure it. The etiology of the problem in the world today is the brain, and it's usually the testosterone-influenced brain, almost always. And the language they use indicates this. And unless we have the courage to explore this in great detail, we'll change nothing. And I suppose on this note, unless the women, who are 53% of the population, rise up and say, OK, we're taking over, nothing will change too, because estrogen and testosterone have a very different impact upon the psyche, as we know when we reach menopause, than does testosterone. And I could go into the physiology, but I won't. But we all know what I'm talking about. So Clinton didn't take on the military and the Joint Chiefs prevailed and the weapons stayed in place. So right now everyone thinks, oh, well, we're safe. You know, we were scared in the 80s, weren't we? Gee, we were scared. Our children were scared. My little boy said, Mum, if there's a nuclear war, I want to be on the roof of the State House in Boston. And I said, why? Why, Will? He said, because I'll be killed first. He's about 9. Now there are 2,500 hydrogen bombs in America on hair trigger alert. And the same in Russia. The Russians have almost lost their early warning system. It's all rusting. People are even cutting the copper wires and taking them away and melting them down because they're so poor that control the release of the weapons. After September 11th, America went to DEFCON 2, the highest state of alert before the button's pressed. Of course, they always do that. And the weapons take half an hour from launch to land. In that time, the satellites pick up the attack, radio back to Moscow or to Bush, and he then has 3 minutes to make a decision whether to launch or not and blow up the Earth. And the same with Putin. And in 1995, they almost had a nuclear war because Norway launched an American missile with a weather satellite atop, and the Russians picked it up and said, oh, my God, America's launched a nuclear attack. For the first time in history, the computer with codes was opened. The first time in history in Russia. And there's Yeltsin, an alcoholic, sitting there with the generals over his shoulder saying, press that button there. At the last 10 seconds of that 3-minute interval, the missile veered off and they realised they weren't under attack. That happens several times each year. And the weapons are still there. And Russia's now America's best friend. Putin's been at Crawford at the ranch. Why are they still there? Every morning we wake up, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. And God damn them, that's all I can say. Why do they put our lives at risk like this? And all of us, because 1,000 bombs dropping on 100 cities creates nuclear winter and the end of life on Earth. And there are 5,000 ready to go like that. And America's policy still is to fight and win a nuclear war. That's still the official policy. How do you win? You knock out the Russian satellite so they can't see your bombs coming. You press your button and the weapons are so accurate they land high diddle diddle straight into their missile silos and you knock out all their weapons. If some escape, the new Star Wars system will mop up the few that escape and destroy them and you've won. Millions of people dying or nuclear winter is called collateral damage. And that's still the Pentagon policy, is to fight and win a new... Still! Now, what's Star Wars about? It's great. There are five layers, and I won't go into it all. There's a small theatre missile defence where you fight wars at a low level in the atmosphere and your weapons hit theirs, like the Patriot missiles hit the Scuds in the Gulf War. Not one single Patriot hit a Scud, and the weapon, the Pentagon was forced to admit that. So that was a lie, and the video you saw was played and replayed and replayed, and it was a scam. Then there are three layers of the next one. You can either hit the missile armed with the nuclear weapon in its boost phase, which is just about 10 seconds or 30 seconds as it goes up into space. That's hard because, you see, there's no human that'll have time to pick it up, but the computers will pick it up and the satellites will pick it up and it'll be computerized nuclear war. And as Carl Sagan once said to me, they've got a battle management computer up in the space, but it can never be tested. And the only time it'll ever be used is to initiate a nuclear war. So that's the first stage, boost phase. The trouble is if you blow up nuclear weapons as they're going to the atmosphere, you'd scatter plutonium all over the Earth. And there's 10 pounds of plutonium in each bomb, and 1 pound of plutonium, hypothetically, could kill every person on Earth with lung cancer. So that's not a good idea. And if they're armed with bacteria, you know, viruses, you scatter them all over the place and create epidemics of disease. So that's not a good idea either. But anyway, that's the military quite favour the boost phase interception. The next phase is the transitional phase through space. And, you know, they're shooting off rockets from Vandenberg and from Hawaii and trying to hit each other mid-air. Well, they keep losing, except now they've developed a great thing. They've got sensors on the bomb that they launch that communicate with the GPS satellite that show them where the bomb is. So when the other interceptor comes, the hit-to-kill vehicle, it's called, it knows where it goes and it hits it. So it's really very clever, except that if an enemy launches a missile, it'll probably have 10 bombs on it. That's called MIRVing, multiple independent reentry vehicles, 10 bombs. They're called passengers. And then the rocket drops off and the bus with the passengers continues through space. And then each passenger hydrogen bomb has a computer in its nose and it's very accurate and it's dropped off as it lands on its target. So that they can have 10 bombs that can separate in space. So you've got 10 targets. And then you can also put Mylar balloons, which look like bombs, in space. And you can heat them up a bit so the temperature is the same as the bomb that's just come from the warm surface of the Earth. So you can have hundreds of Mylar balloons and you can totally confuse the hit-to-kill vehicle, which is trying to hit a bomb. So it'll never work. But it's really great for the military-industrial complex because each test, I think, costs $100 million. Then you can get them in the descending phase when they're descending over America and you can hit them then, but then you're all covered with plutonium and stuff. Now there's another very special thing. America has been for years, NASA, mapping the planets for rare minerals and the moon and the asteroids. Now, what they want to do is launch satellites or nuclear reactors and put them on the moon so you can power a colony of men to mine the rare minerals and bring them back to Earth or Mars, and they're going ahead with the Mars program. So you're launching nuclear reactors, which is dangerous because they might blow up and spread plutonium all over the place. But they're going ahead anyway. Now, if America is investing so much in space, it's got to dominate space. So now they've got a new service called the U.S. Space Command. General Myers, who's now the head of the Joint Chiefs, he used to run that. What they're going to do is militarize space. They're going to put anti-satellite weapons up to knock out other people's satellites, which is sort of dangerous because all our cell phones, all communications, the whole global economy works with satellites. But America's really quite far advanced in anti-satellite warfare, and I've written about that. That's stupid because other people could knock out America's satellites, and who knows who owns which satellite anyway up in the... There are thousands of space objects up there. Then they're going to put orbiting nuclear reactors with huge laser beam technologies. They're going to kill from space so they can vaporize cities. And they said, we will, quotes, affect very many kills from space. Or they can kill each other's satellites or weapons in space from laser beam technology. They're going to have orbiting, probably hydrogen bombs, because Star Wars won't work, you know, intercepting missiles. So the best way really to do it is with a nuclear explosion in space. So that's really the hidden agenda. Now, there's a thing called the Outer Space Treaty, and outer space belongs to all of us. There's a Moon Treaty, and the Moon is common property of all the world's people. But America's going to violate the Moon Treaty and the Outer Space Treaty, and we'll look up and I can say to my grandson, look, Mickey, there's the Southern Cross. Ooh, look, that's an orbiting hydrogen bomb. It's like the Law of the Sea Treaty, remember, that Elliot Richardson so carefully orchestrated for years and years, and then it was cancelled by Reagan because America wanted to control the molybdenum deposits in the sea and all the rest because she had the technology to do it and no one else did. Such extraordinary arrogance, but such dangerous stuff. And they're really advanced in militarizing space. They're really going ahead full blast. The war in Afghanistan, which wasn't a war, it was a massacre. Because a war is people, you know, on horses jousting or shooting each other from trenches or, you know, men fighting each other. This was just bombing people from 40,000 feet. Yet no one smelt any blood. No one saw women with their heads blown off or children with their abdominal viscera hanging out. Up to 5,000 women and children so far were killed in Afghanistan. And as I wrote in my book, body parts are body parts, whether they're coming out of the World Trade Tower or they're in Afghanistan. And human physiology is the same, and we're all sacred. That war was orchestrated from space in a little room at Vandenberg Air Force Base because the technology is so sophisticated now they can see, you know, Afghan people on... And the guys were on donkeys, you know. It's just so sad. Fancy bombing Stone Age people in a way, you know, with these weapons. It's just... it's beyond almost my imagination. And when the World Trade Tower thing happened, I was in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. I got up and I saw it, and I had to give a big forum that night. And 3,000 really shocked kids came, and I thought, what am I going to say to them? And I described the Star Wars things and everything, and then they were mostly Christians. So I said, you know, being a Christian doesn't mean going to church on Sunday or going to heaven when you die. It means living what Jesus preached, and I read them Luke. And I read, love thine enemy, do good to those who hate you. And I said, unless we do that now, we're not going to make it. So I feel quite emotional. We're at a time now that unless we actually do that, and all the prophets said that, be they Muslim or, you know, Hindu or and a Buddha, unless we do that, we're doomed. So the people in office now are inappropriate. They need to be removed by fiat. They need treatment, I suppose. I don't really mind what happens to them, but we need to get in. People like us, and there are millions of us in this country. And you go back to what President Jefferson said, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. And it's ill-informed now and being put to sleep by, you know, all this awful stuff on television which creates alpha brainwaves like you've, you know, you're going to see, you know, when you watch television, you go to sleep. It's awful. But anyway, it has an anaesthetizing effect upon the brain. So it goes through in the left brain and into the right brain lodges there, and you don't even have time to think about it. The images are so fast. We need critical thinking. We need people to stand up and speak the truth. We've got to stop being nice, frightfully nice. How are you? Fine. You know, have a nice day. I don't want to have a nice day. I feel terrible. Just to be real, I think. I ran for the Senate in Australia just a couple of months ago and I failed, and I was really torn whether I should spend my time there because my country's in a terrible mess too, or to come here. And because I lost, it's very clear what I've got to do. So I'll come back for 5 years and give it our best shot. It's not right that these corporations run the world because, as someone said, they're raping the planet and we have to stop them. And I know these men, I see them and treat them as they're dying and on their deathbeds, they recant. And they say, I've lived a wicked life and I wish I'd been better. And the only thing that matters to them is that those they've loved and the good things they've done in their life. And that's what we're here for. We're not here to make ourselves happy. We're not here to be hedonistic, although a little bit of that is nice. What really produces true joy is serving, like spending a day in the clinic, you know, working flat out with the patients and being exhausted at the end of the day, hungry and totally fulfilled, and you sleep well. So that's what we're here for, and that's what this country has to do for. We're in a much more dangerous position now than we ever were during the Reagan years. So thank you.
That was the Australian paediatrician and anti-nuclear campaigner, Helen Caldicott. She spoke to the guests at a house party and potluck in Walnut Creek, California. Her recent book, The New Nuclear Danger, describes in detail the U.S. administration's plans to resume nuclear testing and the real agenda behind the new Star Wars. Next week, you will hear from two colleagues of Helen Caldicott's on the recent decision by the Bush administration to begin burning highly toxic weapons-grade plutonium in commercial nuclear reactors. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on Helen Caldicott and her book on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under newest programs. You can get a copy of the full one-hour tape with Helen Caldicott and the Plutonium Project for $12. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gilardin. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.